Hello, world, and welcome to Search for Calling. My name is Ken Payne. I'm the number one process executive recruiter in the world, along with my co-host, Enid Vien, the number one life energy clearing practitioner in the world. Our guests tonight are David Womack. David is a superb life energy clearing practitioner and husband of Enid. Also, I have Julie Kroger, an executive in the Corporate America Tier 1 Automotive, and she is with us tonight as a testimony to the personeering experience of life energy clearing and executive placement. How you doing tonight, Enid?
I'm good.
All right. How you doing tonight, David?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Julie?
I'm wonderful. Thank you very much for asking.
Yeah. So I wanted to get into a little bit of Enid's background. Enid?
Yeah.
This is your second time on the show.
Uh-huh.
And we had the opportunity to speak with Steve Ory, Robert Troop, Ray Skeens, and now I've got Julie Kroger.
Uh-huh.
And David, this is your first time on the show.
Yes, it is.
So you're out in sunny San Diego.
Yeah, very hot out here today.
Very sunny San Diego today.
And Julie Kroger, you're out in Brooklyn, Michigan.
That is correct. It's a pretty nice day, actually. It's about 60-some degrees and the sun's shining all day today.
And you're having your deck polyurethane?
Yes, I poured a patio yesterday, very big patio, and having it polyurethane as we speak.
Awesome.
Oh. Big job.
So your weather is about, what, 60 degrees out there in Brooklyn?
Yeah, it's about 60. Sun's shining all day today.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the format tonight is, what I'd like to do is go over some of the experiences that you've had in clearing. You had the opportunity to meet with Michael Manning. I think it was about back in December of 07.
I believe you're correct.
Yeah, that's a... I remember that was around your birthday.
Sure is.
I remember my...
December 23rd, actually, is my birthday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Michael Manning was on last week's show with Ray Skeen. Do you remember Ray?
Yes, I do.
Let me go ahead and give out the calling numbers. We're open to receive calls on any questions about the personeering experience of life energy clearing and executive placement using the Wiltel Solutions placement software. If you're calling from Canada or the United States of America, you can reach us at 888-228-4494 or worldwide at 877-489-6350. And also, I've just had a walk-in guest come in. This is Jay Moore. Jay Moore is a personeer here in Tell City, Indiana, where we're broadcasting from. Jay, how you doing today with the pollen?
It's not a good day. I lost the war. The battle of the yard, the war of the pollen, has been lost by me.
So this is the first time you cut your lawn today?
Yeah, it is. It was, you know, you could hear the ooh, ah going on.
In the jungle, huh?
Yeah, I could.
Let's go ahead and give those numbers out one more time. In the United States or Canada, we're open to receiving calls today. If you're calling from the United States or Canada, it's 888-228-4494 or worldwide at 877-489-6350. So what I'd like to do is turn the spot over to David Womack, and David, you get a chance. Go back to the first time you met Enid and give me a thumbnail from what's your life been since.
You want me to go back to the very first time I met Enid?
That was probably back on another planet somewhere. You guys are soulmates, right?
Well, we could go back this far, but let's take real time.
Yeah.
I was actually I'd seen her from across the distance at a restaurant, which was also a bar, and I thought I had made eye contact with her, and she was with this guy, you know, with the. She didn't look very interested in it, let me put it that way, okay? So I didn't say anything, and a week went by, and then I was in the same restaurant. It was very crowded, and I was walking through, and something hit my chest, and I looked down, and it was Enid. I about knocked her over on the floor. So I picked her up, and I says, "Hey, you remember me?" And, of course, you know, you ask someone who's as awake as Enid, and she looks me up and down. She kind of looks at me with this faraway look, and she goes, "No." Well, that blew my whole game plan, right? So I says, "Would you like to dance?" And she said yes. And, of course, the rest of this was from there. We started talking, and, you know, I was at a point in my life where things were kind of crazy. I'd just gotten out of the military, and in the Marine Corps, and was trying to find my way. And Enid was really pretty cool about what she does, because she didn't force it on me or anything. We got to dating and stuff, and then we moved in together, and she had her practice going at that time, and I would see people coming in, and I swear they would look like they had the whole world on their shoulders when they walked in. And she would, we had a two-story townhouse at the time. She would take them into a closed door, and I wouldn't hear anything, and they'd come out, and it was like they were walking on air. They were smiling, and so this went on for about a week or two, maybe 3-4 weeks, and finally one day I said, "What the heck are you doing up there?" And she says, "Well, why don't you come up and find out?" And I went up and sat down, and she handed me, she started asking me some questions, basically. And it seemed like I was only there for, I don't know, 30 minutes maybe. But 2 hours had passed, and I felt wonderful. And I couldn't figure out what had happened. It didn't seem like anything had really happened. It seemed like we were there chatting. We were in rapport with each other. And she says, "That's what I do. I help people sort out, you know, their problems." And I said, "Can I get some more of that?" And from there, man. And the rest is history. I just started working on me. And then it got to the point where I thought, geez, you know, something was wonderful. Maybe I should help others. And I guess it was 1989 was when I actually started to study and learn how to do this work. And then in 92 I started my own practice. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And we've been going since then.
Wow. 1992.
I don't know if you wanted all that or not, but that's pretty much how it happened.
That's great.
A short version of it. Yeah.
Hey, Julie.
Yes.
Tell me what was going on in your life before you started getting clearing.
A lot of mixed emotions, confusion, didn't know which way to turn. And then I had the clearing, which opened up my mind, my eyes to see what I was really about. Which way I needed to go. It helped me tremendously. Right now, advancing my career. Don't take things too heartedly anymore. It's helped me out, like I said, tremendously. With the meeting that I had with Michael, he is a very, very good listener. Understanding. Took a load off my chest.
Yeah, I remember my first clearing session. I came in with the weight of the world on my shoulders, like David was saying, and I guess after about 4 or 5 days of clearing, I felt like I was walking on cloud nine.
Yeah, I felt like I was as light as a feather after I got done with that clearing. It was actually about a week that we did that, wasn't it, Ken?
Yeah, we did it for about 4 or 5 days.
Yeah. Yep. And after that last day, it just felt like a ton of bricks had been lifted off my chest.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's kind of like digging into the past and surfacing your golden nuggets and then being acknowledged for your strengths.
That's correct, and I'm finding that's helping me more and more, even today.
Do you remember whenever I brought out Enid Vian's book called The Sovereignty Manual and a list of 34 psychic abilities? And we made a chart, and you picked out your top five?
Yeah, I think I was down in Kentucky when you and I had done that, didn't we?
And we did that up at Michigan. To pull up the manual here, see if you remember any of these. Right now, my website, www.searchforcalling.com, it talks about surfacing your golden nuggets, and there's a list of 34 psychic abilities, and I've developed some processes, question and answer processes, that give the individual to take from this list what they perceive to be psychic abilities that they have strengths in, and I think that's a really good start for acknowledgement. Let's go over some of the listings in the Sovereignty Manual. If you're interested in more information on dynamism clearing, you can go to www.dynamism.org, and that's D-Y-N-A-M-I-S-M, dynamism.org. So I was looking at the psychic abilities, it's chapter 18 in the Sovereignty Manual. And it starts off with a old Yorkshire saying. It says, "All the world is strange except for me and thee. And even thee is just a little odd." Enid, when you was writing that chapter, do you remember why you brought that up to the front of the chapter as an intro?
Well, I like it. It's always been a saying that's amused me. And B, there is so much tragedy in the world because we don't accept each other's differences that it seemed like the perfect thing to put attention on. So I did.
Yeah. When I read it, I was thinking something close to that, and then I started thinking along the lines of how different we really all are, but how similar we are all, and how we all really have psychic abilities, and how maybe it's not too terribly popular to go about espousing them, and how we cover them up. So I look at the
psychic
ability.
Nobody wants to be sent to the funny farm.
What's that?
Nobody wants to be sent to the funny farm.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what people think if you tell them, certain things, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember it was one time you said it's almost like we've got an unspoken agreement as a human race not to show off our psychic abilities.
Yes. I think that's very true. And besides which, if you weren't sent to the funny farm, you'd be in some laboratory being measured.
I'm trying to
some degree, take the lid off of that and have people accept that there is more to this world than is dreamed of in our philosophy.
Yeah, the idea of coming to this life and making less of ourselves to fit in. And I'm wondering, what group collective makes these rules?
I'm afraid we all have to accept some responsibility.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
Well, the idea of operationalizing psychic abilities and bringing peace to the world by acknowledging our differences is certainly, it's got my interest.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard for me to accept that at that point in time in my life, Ken, when I had went through the clearing, that everybody has differences and that yours are not the only ones that are right. And the clearing helped me understand that more.
Good.
Yeah, it's an eye opener.
Yep.
So let me go down a list of some of these psychic abilities, and let's see if I can acknowledge. Julie, I'd like to acknowledge your psychic abilities and see if you recall this. Do you remember empathy? Empathy.
Yeah.
When I think of empathy, have you ever heard of the word empath?
No, I don't know.
Being empathic. Enid, how does empathy and empath correlate?
Well, a person who has empathy strongly is sometimes called an empath.
Yeah.
But it's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is probably the most common of the psychic abilities.
We look at the word psych, I believe it's Greek for soul.
It is, or spirit, to be more exact.
Yeah. And it seems it's all right. It's popularized to talk about psychology, and that would be the study of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has a soul.
Well, modern psychology is coming back around to accepting that there is a spirit side of everybody. For a long time, they were denying its existence and just thinking we were a bunch of chemicals. But that fortunately has tended to slide away more.
Yeah, throughout history, kind of segment history, we were went through the Dark Ages, and that was pretty religified, and there was a lot of fear and darkness and religion in that time where only certain people held the keys to salvation. And then we come across Copernicus and Galileo. They opened up a new segment of the Exploration Age, and so it broke the paradigm where everything was perfect. We are the center of the universe. Everything is like a clock. And they realized that it wasn't. It set out the explorers to find out really what's out there. And this brought in the age of science, scientific methodologies. You can say that's been pretty much the paradigm up until, held popularly up until, when would you say that?
When the physicists started to get really clever and really, really delve deeper than had ever been seen before, all of a sudden the world got less solid. And that's very interesting.
What do you mean by less solid?
Well, they realized that things were not exactly as they appeared to be. And so, as time went on, they started to realize that there were many, many things that we didn't know that weren't answered previously in science, which were now becoming answered.
I think it's a very interesting time to be alive and in our human history. You had Einstein.
For sure.
Excuse me?
For sure.
Yeah. So, we went to the Enlightenment era of what was back in the 1700s? 1700s?
No, I mean, really, if you're going to go for science, it used to be called natural philosophy, And it was of great interest to the ancient Greeks. So it's been here. It just was ignored for a long time.
Well, people thought you were crazy, too, didn't they? Back then, if you felt that you had psychic abilities?
Well, yeah, and in fact, you see, some people are. It can get very confusing.
Cannot disagree with you on that one.
Let me go back there. Would you say we have psychic abilities and then it gets a little bit crazy, and then Enid, you said then some people are. Do you mean psychic or you mean crazy?
Both.
Exactly.
To be psychic in this world with all of its painful emotions can be very painful and can have an effect on people that makes them A, worry about their sanity, and B, often go a little bit over the edge because they are so worried about it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what type of medical professional do you go to whenever suddenly you have an ascension experience and your psychic abilities are rejuvenated and are open, and you really do start to think you're losing your mind, and you go to a therapist or a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and next thing you know, you're put on medication.
Yeah, or Zac or Xanax or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I believe they're starting to open up to the prospect that of what the ancients said. You know.
Here and there.
I know that Einstein had a lot to say about his search. I think he started off with, and so did Newton. He started off as an alchemist, trying to figure out the etheria? Ether?
Einstein felt that he disproved that was an existence. He spent a lot of time trying to find what he called the universal theory. I don't know that he was ever quite happy with his findings, you know?
Yeah.
Because he was a deeply religious man. Interesting.
Yeah, another one here in your list of psychic abilities is precognitions and hunches. I don't think there's anyone that I've ever spoken to that has an experience of precognition or a hunch. Julie, you get precognitions about what's going to happen, and suddenly, hey, it happened.
Quite often.
I don't think it's your finger doing that, or your toe.
It's almost like you've been in that situation before. You know,
mm-hmm.
and there's like no explanation for it. You see or feel it coming. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's there, it happens, and you're like, you know, like you've been here before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you say, Enid, that whenever a person receives clearing, that they become more psychic?
Well, I think they become not necessarily more psychic, but more accepting of the abilities they've had all along.
You tend to notice it more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you just become more in tune with it.
Right.
You're more accepting of it. You don't fight it anymore.
Exactly.
And you don't think of yourself as being crazy when you do experience it.
That's good. Yeah.
Say, David.
Yes.
When you were, before you met Enid, were you seeking spiritual awareness?
You know, I had been prior to going into the military. And I had, coming from a background of Southern Baptist, I was thrown out of Sunday school quite often. And I'm the I'm the minister's grandson, you know, so I looked out that. So, you know, back then they used to whip you if you did things wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So I was often going to get the switch for the whippings at the Sunday meetings. But, yeah, you know, I would ask the difficult questions, you know, because I always felt different. I always felt I had been here before, and I felt like I made a wrong turn somewhere when I got into the family I was in, okay?
Yeah.
But it was really strange at times, and there was no one to really turn to. And, you know, when you ask the questions, you know, the whys, the whats, and, you know, and the answer they give you is, boy, you got to believe. You got to believe what you're reading. You got to believe, you know. And I wanted to believe, and it just didn't work for me. So I went on a quest of my own as I got older, and looked at Catholicism, Roman Catholic. I even looked at Judaism, you know, and of course that was a little tough to get into, but I just did a lot of different things. Transcendental meditation, that was one of the things back then that was really big. I kind of looked at that. And, you know, I just started searching, and then when I got in the Marine Corps, it just sort of fell to the wayside, you know. It just sort of... I don't know, you just start living every day for every day at that point. So,
yeah.
But when I got out, you know, as I said, I had some difficulty transitioning back into the civilian world. And the thing for me was, you know, I don't know, I just felt this tension, this anguish all the time. And I just couldn't explain why I had it. And of course, you know, when you're in the service, they sort of, you know, encourage that sort of thing for battle, but, you know, in the civilian world, there's no place for it. So, I was pretty good at keeping it under wraps, you know. So, it kind of started again, just sort of looking. And then, of course, I found a clearing, and like I said, you know, I started to feel better and just go from there, you know. It doesn't take
a lot
of science.
Do you think your psychic abilities have increased since you've gotten into clearing?
I think my awareness of abilities that I've probably had and ones that I just never took interest in before have become more conscious of them. And I've become more confident in using them. Perception, for instance, trusting the perception. Or, you know, the sense that something is not right and going with that feeling, for instance. I don't always know what it is, but I've learned to trust that there's something wrong, so I ask questions or I stop and take a look to see if I can spot it. But the ability to see has gotten better. And when I say that, I mean to see obvious things to us that go by every day that we just let go by, but they're little things that make little digs at us, you know? So seeing and handling those things keeps a lot of crap off your plate.
Yeah. Hey, Jim Bird.
Yeah?
When you first got here, you were pretty psychic. Then you went to, we started working on some processes together. Share with the audience what your experience was and, the before and after clearing experiences pertains to your increasing of your psychic awareness.
It kind of goes along with what David said. I really agree with about what he said about as far as you become aware of them and kind of observing the obvious. But back in the day, you know, when you have certain psychic abilities when you're a younger kid and you kind of feel like you're a little freak, because you can't talk to about anybody, but you can't even talk to your parents, you know, that you have clairvoyant experiences, you know. You see things that come to you in daydreams and pictures, and 2 weeks later they come true, and you go, oh, there's that picture. So, and you don't know where they come from, and to learn to be able to, clearing does allow you to accept those more openly, and therefore I think you learn to use your abilities more. That's where what you're maybe referring to is strengthening.
Yeah, discipline.
You know, practice makes perfect kind of thing.
Hey, Julie.
Yes.
share with the audience some of your awareness since clearing.
Daily activities. Sometimes you feel a little different in the morning when you get up than you do on other days. You know when you're going to have a good day or a bad day. If something out of ordinary is going to happen, you're kind of like prepared for it ahead of time. And you don't feel like you're some kind of freak. It's just a feeling that's kind of hard to explain. But it helps. You notice more, you recognize it. And it's nothing to be ashamed of or anything out of ordinary, in my opinion.
And another thing, too, Ken, might be that, you know, like what Dave was talking about, your awareness and your perception becoming heightened. Therefore, if you've got a psychic ability of persuasion, of course that's going to be enhanced if you're listening more, being more perceptive and being more aware. You're going to be more persuasive if that's one of your psychic abilities. So it kind of do go hand in hand a little bit.
Yeah, and I'll have to agree with you on that, because sometimes when you wake up and you can feel it, you know how persuasive you're going to be that day. You know?
Actually, in the Sovereignty Manual, persuasion is listed as a psychic ability.
It definitely is. Some people are extremely good at it, and others it seems to have missed completely. Like, a lot of psychic abilities are that way. When you get into some of these abilities, you have to look at the ethics of using them. When it's really a good thing to use your powers of persuasion, and when it's not so good. Because if you don't look at the ethics of it, sooner or later you're going to mess up. And that's another thing that we stress in dynamism is use your psychic abilities, but use them for the general good, not for, frivolous stuff.
No, if there's a task that needs to be completed, and it's for the good, mm-hmm. and you can feel that you're going to have a good day, then is the time to use it. And I find that the clearing has helped me to recognize that so much more now.
Good. I think part of the reason the psychic abilities became so unpopular was that people were afraid of being influenced against their will. And
you mean something to be aware of. I mean, maybe they thought that they were being possessed by the devil or something like that.
Well, sometimes people would go that far. I mean, that's pushing it. But yes, people did go that far and did, in fact, worry tremendously that they could be adversely influenced to do things that they wouldn't normally do, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Although, to me, that's more like a fear of hypnosis than a real issue. Because most people with psychic abilities out there are careful with them, because if you use them badly, you tend to lose them.
I have to agree with them on that one.
Yeah, you know, and as far as like taking things seriously, you know, the witch hunts in Salem were, you have a lot of things that are unexplained, and next thing you know, you're clarified as a witch because somebody can't put their finger on physical evidence to prove something. So,
yeah.
We could take
it. That was a very scary thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say so.
But there is, I've heard some theory that there was some form of ergot from which we make LSD that had gotten in the drinking water in Salem.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's true, but I heard it. And it's
I've heard that theory
also. I've heard that they've done I've heard that they've done tests on water and they're finding all kinds of stuff in it, so.
Really? Interesting.
It was on the news a couple of weeks ago. Things like antibiotics, Viagra, even drugs that people do.
Well, I think that's some runoff from it getting into the drains.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've been so busy looking for an answer to what the heck really happened in Salem. They're like, oh, God. I don't know. But I thought it was very interesting, the explanation that they may all have been, not knowing it, on drugs.
It's an interesting theory. Something I've been thinking about, and I shared this with Jay, is it possible for a person to use their psychic abilities and use them in the wrong way and lose them? Or, you know, generally speaking, if a person does things that are going to cause soul wounds, this concept of using your psychic abilities to get your way, and do they turn off when you hurt people?
Well, you know, it's one of the things that it is not, there's not one hard and fast answer.
Right.
But it is, I think, frequent enough to be noticeable that when people do misuse their abilities, they're ashamed of it and they have a tendency to pull back.
Shut them down.
Yeah.
We're talking about
which is one of the things, by the way, that shows you that mankind isn't as irredeemable as he has sometimes seemed to be.
Yeah.
Like a criminal that just has to get caught.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way he can stop.
I bring up the idea of getting clearing to rejuvenate your psychic abilities based on the concept of you know, the theory of dynamis can become decayed and block off us from our awareness, our surroundings, our ability to have rapport with other people.
Yeah.
I think of a good clearing session is like removing the barriers that are blocking us up, and then our soul becomes more open, or we become more open, and
your
then our ability to communicate and our awareness goes up. So I would think that by the very virtue of unblocking the flow, that we would become more psychic.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. But,
it certainly gives you more dynamis that you control and that you can use in creating whatever it is you want.
Right.
When a person's shut down or is introverted, they're usually not very effective. But a person that is flowing out freely, generally, sometimes the thought makes it happen.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's
well, we look at the word dynamic, and you'll look at the word dynamism. You need to go into explaining those two words, being dynamic, and what David was saying is we outflow more.
Okay. The word dynamis, which is the word that I use for life energy, was originally used by the ancient Greeks. And when they used it, they meant the energy of a god originally that he or she put into the particular items that were special to that god, so that the god of healing would put his strength into the elixirs or the medicines they were using. Excuse me, and the god of archery would put their particular life energy into their arrows and things of that nature. As time went on, they started to use it more generally as a word that just meant life energy or life force. And that is how I am using it. And I chose the word because it's so descriptive, because, you know, from it we get the word dynamic, dynamo. And it has the concept of a heck of a lot of motion in it. And I like that. It seemed appropriate.
I believe it is. Well, it really is at the core of the being.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first started studying dynamism, the philosophy itself was able to explain so many things in terms of the source, the energy, the manifestation. And I remember you were going over the philosophy of it, that a painter could flow their love and their meaning into their art and through the paint, that dynamis that the original artist put into the painting would literally continue to flow. It's beautiful.
And it's so true. I mean, look at some of the wonderful works of art that you have seen, and you know, you can't help but know what that person was thinking and feeling when he did it. It just sort of just flows at you.
Yeah, I believe in that. You feel it coming through the art. It gives you energy yourself when you look at it.
Yeah. It's one of the most amazing and wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
So at the core philosophy of dynamism, the study of life energy, is there anything that is not flowing dynamis?
Anything that's dead is not flowing dynamis.
Yeah.
Everything that lives is.
And there are a lot of metaphysician theories that everything is alive because it's moving, even though it appears solid.
Well, without a certain amount of dynamis in it, it's going to be immobilized. But,
right.
You know, in other words, when we create things like paintings or dinner, we put some of ourselves into it. And I don't mean by cutting your finger.
Right. Well, the paint, it's not alive, but you're obviously able to communicate to that paint.
You're imbuing it with your life energy.
Yeah, imbuing it.
Yeah. In other words, you are bringing it to life. It's not independent life, but it is life of sorts.
Sure.
So I wouldn't necessarily disagree with these people that think life isn't everything. I mean, I think they have a good point.
So to truly study the philosophy of dynamism, it does reach the pinnacle of explaining source.
It doesn't exactly explain source, because I don't have that much, what's the word, hubris? Hubris meaning I'm just not that conceited that I think I can explain this. Everybody has their own perception of source, and I think it's better that each person comes to their own conclusions. Now, if my writings help them to do so, that's one thing. But I wouldn't want to be telling them what to think or how to think about that. I just wouldn't.
Yeah, I totally understand. The idea that we know that dynamis flows.
Mm-hmm.
And it flows from each being.
Yeah. And this is why, you know, people with a heck of a lot of life energy survive things that basically would bring other people to their knees. And doctors are always wondering why one patient lives and one dies when they have the same symptoms. And it's very hard on them because they can't codify it, and they're taught that they should be able to.
So in the practice of dynamism and blocking the flow and clearing off the decayed life energy walls
mm-hmm.
often can lead to health and becoming more dynamic.
It's amazing how often that does happen. You know?
Yeah.
Just amazing. It's not something I would necessarily predicted. But there it is. You can't deny it.
So, Julie.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your clearing session. What did it feel like?
The clearing session opened doors for me. I was pretty much a self-centered person. I thought everything that I knew was the right way. Best way. It helped me to see when things are going to happen a little more, to recognize it, understand it, and handle it appropriately, where I benefited as long as the other person on the receiving end benefited. There was a ton of bricks lifted off of my chest. I think that the last day, Ken, or the day before the last, that Robert and I had sat with each other.
That was a beautiful rapport session.
Yeah, that was. I don't think I have the words to explain the feeling that day. Robert and I connected mentally without saying words.
Did you say that you connected spiritually?
Yes. Without saying a word.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That is too cool.
It was like we were talking to each other, but our mouth didn't even open. And after that, it's like you kind of knew what each other was thinking at work, which was kind of scary, but... It was great.
Okay.
That's powerful.
That is.
That's real rapport.
And it's helped me tremendously advance.
We want to kind of recap here a little bit on this concept of psychic abilities and unblocking decayed life energy barriers so that we get a very good connect, a spiritual rapport. Enid, you had brought up how some of the, maybe possibly in the past where people became fearful of psychic abilities because they thought that maybe they would be persuaded or hypnotized.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever come across a session of rapport building where the individual was scared of rapport because possibly they thought they would lose their viewpoint with that deep of a spiritual connection?
I have run into it, but not recently. A lot of things have been, I think, loosening up. I think more and more people are willing. I think, however, there is a certain fear of it. I mean, as Julie just said, you know, it was a little scary at first.
When you're not used to being open like that, and all of a sudden all this stuff just breaks away and you don't want anything to do with that old trash anymore. You want to grow and live and become more of what you want to be. That when something like that happens, it's a little scary.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge raise in responsibility, for one thing. And a lot of people are scared of that.
A lot of people are afraid of responsibility.
It is a huge raise in responsibility.
Yeah, because all of a sudden it's up to you.
You become more aware of your actions.
It's not up to other people, you know. All of a sudden it's your baby. And that's hard for some people to accept and to do. I have never claimed that dynamism was an easy path. I just think it's the best path I know of.
Well, it's certainly not for the unethical, is it?
No, it isn't. It really isn't.
You know, talk about the word ethics and talk about the word confront, and I believe I may have picked this up in the basic philosophy of dynamism, but I believe that the human being has to be present in order to confront, to take the responsibility, and the more that the being is aware, the more they see themselves as source, and they do confront more. They do become more ethical, and somehow or another, their presence more there, the more intelligent they become. You see how you connect those dots between ethics, confront, and intelligence and responsibility?
Well, yeah, I do. Now, I think that seeing oneself as source can be misunderstood to mean the only source. And that, of course, is not a workable position to take.
Right.
It's like that German philosopher that started a book that said, the world is my idea. And the other German philosophers all laughed and said, I wonder what his wife thinks of that.
Right.
So I like to be a little careful with that. So what I'm going to say about it is that as people expand their awareness, they become more interested in other people and other people's and the effect they're having on other people. For one thing, they're not as introverted, so they start being able to see more. And when you see more, obviously you confront more. You know, it's kind of like if you don't see the dirty dishes in the sink, it's just about certain that you're not going to wash them.
Right. So when a person says that they're under stress, what they're really basically saying is there are certain things they don't want to confront.
Most often, yes. Yes.
It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. My mother used to put it very well. She used to say, I don't wish to know that.
I don't wish to know that.
I thought it was pretty funny and clever at the time, but I think it ultimately led to her demise. I mean, it certainly sounds witty, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean to say that each individual as not the source, but more like how Confucius said that path of the archer, not to blame the arrow or the target, but people who are into self-correction will understand that concept. But, you know.
Yeah, very much so.
What I'd like to do is talk about this the concept of where we're at this day and age with the information age. and where it could possibly lead. I know that we have a lot more philosophers on the planet these days than we did, say, just 50 years ago.
We have a lot more educated people. This is always helpful. Some of them, unfortunately, are not using their education to assist us. But many of them are. So it's kind of hard to generalize. But looking at it, I'd say the information age has made a huge difference because people can learn things much more quickly, much more easily without all the effort and stress. And it's opened many, many doors that were previously not open. And now that they are, it's kind of like, what are we going to do with this? Are we going to waste it, or are we going to use it in a way that makes the world a better place to live, makes people more spiritually inclined, or are we going to do it in such a way that we build bigger and better bombs?
Yeah. I know that access to spiritual concepts is a lot easier in the last 10 to 15 years than it was, say, 30 years ago.
Yeah. People are beginning to accept that there is more in the universe than they learn in school. And they're beginning to accept that this is actually okay.
Yeah,
that's
I believe
a wonderful
that,
thing.
Yeah, I believe that. That's what I feel. I see it more on TV that, you know, the things that we're talking about now just 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they might have had somebody protesting us.
Yeah, never. They would never have been discussed.
Well, one of my high purposes is to continue talking like this, popularizing the psychic abilities, and form enlightened collectives in work.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think
hey, Julie.
Admirable. Yes.
What do you think about the company that would actually support this clearing, life energy clearing?
Oh, I think it would benefit a company tremendously. I think it would break down a lot of barriers in between, whether it be man-woman or man-man, woman-woman, to be able to understand each other more and realize that they all have the same direction that they want to go in. It's just everybody gets to it a different way. And you should listen to other people and to be able to understand better. If a company would do that, I would say they would benefit from it so much. It would be unbelievable.
I truly believe that if a company embraces the life energy clearing with the staffing software that allows corporate executives to attract people who are like this, that's the kind of company I would want to work for.
And myself included in that.
Yeah, well, and that's another thing. In order to remain competitive in the information age, companies here in America have a bit of a hard road to hoe. And that I think becoming more open to new ideas because the new ideas are the ones which will carry them into the future.
Agreed.
Yeah, because, you know, when the old ideas aren't working, you have a lot more incentive to take a look at new ideas.
True. Do you have any other companies that have ever embraced clearing for their human resources initiatives?
I can't really discuss that because of client confidentiality, but yes.
What are the statistics like from the before and after snapshot?
The main one that I'm thinking, the main one I'm thinking of, pretty much doubled its productivity and its income in less than a year.
Imagine the retention's through the roof too.
Retention of personnel? No, I don't know. I don't have any stats on that. So I can't really answer it.
Yeah.
But I think that they retained the majority, but there were a few apples in there that were kind of in the wrong place, and that did have to be taken out of the barrel.
As doing a clearing like that would clearly show you who you have in the right place or not.
Yeah,
and that would it's bound to happen.
Yeah,
that's my own personal opinion. I've been in, you know, so many previous lives where people have been in the wrong spot, or maybe they just didn't want to open up and be who they really could be. Was afraid
yeah.
to. And
yeah, that's the percentage.
Yeah, once you break down the walls, the things like that are bound to happen.
Yeah, I just don't have the stats on it, but I do think that they ended up with a much more comfortable group.
Yeah, because there's always one or two that's going to hold somebody back, or, you know what I'm saying, Enid?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
of course. Anybody that's ever had employees knows exactly what you're saying.
So how do we popularize this?
Well, we keep doing what we're doing, getting the word out.
Exactly. We're getting the word out. I believe that I've had a couple of successes with some companies in the human resources management field. Going into SHRM, Senior Human Resources Management, and selling the software that sets up the models for clearing processes.
Mm. Interesting.
I'm going to start getting into public speaking. More than just radio, but actual face-to-face.
Uh-huh.
Now you'd come across Julie Kroger when she had had some difficulties. Obviously, if you can imagine working at a company, a corporation, where they embrace it, and you start looking at getting the walls down between people, have their attention on something besides security and more towards a line of empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
You'd actually end up with an enlightened collective. Then you start thinking about how attractive that is, especially to the folks who are in their 20s right now.
Yeah.
Well, people would be willing to come into work and happy and be very productive, knowing that they didn't have to worry about trying to break down somebody else's wall. You know, mm-hmm. when you get along with people and you work well with them, it's a lot easier than going and not knowing what you're going to be faced with from day to day, what kind of issue you're going to have today.
Yeah.
Well, I want to go ahead and we're about the halfway point here. I'd like to welcome a listening audience to call in. If you're in the Canada or United States of America, you can call in for any questions that we can answer. It pertains to clearing and executive coaching and staffing software. The number for Canada and the United States of America is 888-228-4494. Or worldwide at 877-489-6350. Jay, you've been here for you started working here at the Columbus Group. What day did you start here? What month was it? Was it September?
September. 5 years ago.
I think it's...
Going on six.
So you've been here for almost 6 years. Share some of your experiences with the Wheeltail Solutions. I remember when you first got here, I trained you how to do those profiles.
What was amazing to me is the same thing that I saw in myself when you first came to me, and that was seeing patterns of things that were more business-related that I was doing that I was unaware of. Yeah, I was too close to my own self to be able to see myself. Sometimes you need to be able to step away from yourself and be more objective in order to see yourself. So I noticed people starting to get these cognitions, and, well, that's what I've been doing all this time. Well, no wonder. And then they start correlating that cognition back to their experiences, finding out that they kept doing these things over and over again, expecting a different result, which is pretty much insanity. I've seen it where it seemed to protect more heart about the people that are going to work for you, not about going and just taking a job. It became more that I like the person I'm working with. I know where he's coming from. This is, you know, his answer, how he feels about the mission, things of this nature, and the company itself. And people started to find they had like values, things of this nature. So I noticed people starting to get these cognitions, started to find things that they were, their paths were wrong in their own lives. And since it's mathematically quantifiable, one of the things that gave us some credibility is you can't sell a person that can see. So the people could see for themselves, and it kind of took the sales aspect out of our industry and our business. And I think that it made it so much more powerful.
Yeah, I remember a lot of times after you would profile a person with a Wheeltail Solutions profile, they would say, have you ever worked here before? How did you know that the...
yeah, you act like you work here. And that goes along, too, with clearing. When you get to clearing... become more open to people, and you can actually feel more. Control your emotions more, which will actually allows you to feel more. Most people think, well, if I get rid of my emotions, then I'll feel less. And actually, the opposite is what occurs. So you can actually be that person when you're given a profile. And it is kind of like being there.
Now, the profile that we're talking about is the Wheeltail Solutions profile. It is a patent-pending software that sets a mirror effect for each individual runs the profile at work. It provides a unique personal insight and an organizational insight, and we use it for transparency, and it makes a great foundation or a basis for life energy clearing. This is Search for Calling. This is Ken Payne, and my guest tonight is Enid Vien, the number one life energy clearing practitioner on the planet. Her website is www.dynamism.org, and I'll spell that D-Y-N-A-M-I-S-M. That's www.dynamism.org, and another guest we have is David Womack, a superb dynamism clearing practitioner. Dynamism is a word for life energy. And another guest we have tonight is Julie Kroger. She's an executive, corporate America, who's experienced the personeering process, which is using the WillTel Solutions software for placement and staffing, organizational development, executive coaching, using the dynamism, life energy, clearing techniques. Also, we have tonight Jay Moore, who's a personeer, and he'd studied in dynamism clearing and is an executive recruiter and coach that uses the WillTel Solutions profile. And my name is Ken Payne. This is www.searchforcalling.com. Tonight we've been talking about a list of Enid Vienne's psychic abilities in her latest book called The Sovereignty Manual. And giving a recap of tonight's show, we've talked about how life energy clearing can unblock your life energy so that you become more psychic, more aware, more perceptive, and how more popular these concepts, these practices, these techniques are becoming more easily embraced by corporations, and how the information age has made it more popular for us to implement these technologies into corporations and the human capital integration goals. We're broadcasting out of Tell City, Indiana, which is between Evansville, Indiana, and Louisville, Kentucky. Julie Kroger's up in the southern Michigan, southeast Michigan, not too far from Detroit. Julie, how far away are you from Detroit?
Oh, probably about 55, 60 miles west.
So you're doing some consulting right now, going into companies and implementing quality initiatives?
Yes, I am, yes.
Yeah.
And it's helped me out tremendously. And actually, I'm helping this company out with some of the things that I have taken away from the clearing.
Awesome. And David Womack and Enid Vienne are they're broadcasting from La Mesa, California, which is... Enid is just about, what, 10 to 15 miles from San Diego Airport?
Yeah. Yeah, we're very close to the airport.
So you have six or you have seven books?
Something like that. I lost track a while back.
I remember your number one book, I believe it came out in the 90s, it's The Healing Spirit, and that goes over the general philosophy of dynamism.
Yeah. It's the philosophy behind the philosophy, if you like. it's what I had to work with, you know, when I first began. I had reached a point where I wanted to re-examine everything I thought I knew. And while I was doing that, I thought, well, I might as well write it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What
a very interesting occupation, by the way. If you sit down to write down what you believe you know and that you're certain of, it's a very interesting exercise. I don't want to say more than that because I might spoil it for someone.
Oh, it's a beautiful, very powerful, powerfully enlightening philosophy. You also have The Staircase to Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it has 14 different levels up until you get to the point where now you're currently working on the integration, the empowerment levels.
Yeah.
And the empowerment levels, the goal there is to be able to maintain these psychic abilities?
Well, actually, what I'm working on there is a little more intense than that. I am actually working on trying to unlock any psychic abilities that might have been lurking. So this is new for me. I've mostly concentrated on getting out with the person what was already sitting there. Now I'm going for the things that are less obvious.
Well, tonight's program, we're talking about corporations that would embrace the concept of true spiritual empowerment at work. It pertains to rapport building, getting a collective enlightenment, a group of individuals who are, for lack of a better word, not ashamed to use their psychic abilities.
Yeah.
And we were also talking about we're at the age that we're all kind of grown up with the kind of fed up with some of the group dissensions that we come to when it revolves politics and trying to make less of our psychic abilities to fit in. And that's usually whenever I clam up is whenever I go into a group and try to become popular and fit in, get into the herding instinct, and then suddenly it's like I'm not operating from the authentic self. And I know a lot of people that I have put on an interview and done coaching in these profiles and indicate to them to be authentic when they go into a interview. And one of their biggest concerns is, well, if I'm authentic, they won't accept me.
Oh, yeah, I can see.
You know, Ken, if I could say, I find that disappointing myself when I go into a room and try to fit in with a group rather than being myself. It's disappointing when you walk out of that room because you,
yeah, I see that.
You're hiding behind something. You're afraid to be yourself, like you said. People will not accept you, they won't like you. In all actuality, you stop and think about it, the more you are yourself, the more people will accept you. You have no false curtains in front of you, you know, that people will see behind. Because you can't always be in a room with, as I say, your tail between your legs trying to fit in. There are times when you're going to be yourself, and when that does come out, people see you differently.
I totally understand. It's one of the biggest problems, biggest challenges that we face as a human race is to not make less of our true authentic self, our psychic ability, and to fall into the herding instinct.
It's a bit like falling into the abyss. I do agree. And of course, that's one of the reasons I do what I do, is because, hey, who wants to be a sheep?
Yeah, you know? I think if you're a sheep, you basically are walking around in the doo-doo of all the other sheep, and that's how we just get muddied up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You find yourself buying, you're in trouble.
Yeah, that situation, right? It's almost like we took political correctness to the wrong way. I mean, political correctness came in so we would not be so disrespectful or degrading of other cultures and beliefs, and or just because people thought differently. You know, basically corporate America didn't want you saying things about that, you know, derogatory things of this nature. And I think we missed the boat. You know, it's supposed to be that so we can accept each other, that we have differences, and just acknowledge and understand that we have differences, and we're not going to be exactly alike, and that's what makes the life so exciting and fun and interactive with different beings and who are just different people. So I think mm-hmm. that we missed the boat on that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I agree on that statement.
Well, everyone's going around walking on eggshells.
Yeah, watch what you say around this guy, or don't say that, or don't do this. Don't act like that. Instead
yeah.
of, you should be yourself. Accept me for what I am, because this is me.
Yeah, and what's wrong with that? That's great. You know, this is a level of understanding. The other is more of a shutting the door on the on life.
Yeah.
That we don't want to do. Want to keep that door wide open, folks.
Well, get that.
Yeah.
You know, looking at coaching, doing a lot of executive coaching, a lot of executive recruiting over the years, and this age that we're living in, we're in the information age. You look at where we're at as an economy, and you're seeing these manufacturing plants close, and you see how everyone's kind of scared to be as dynamic and truly come in and make a difference because they're more concerned about, oh, I hope I get this job. And I turn it around and I talk to an executive. I said, instead of going in there, minding your P's and Q's and walking on eggshells, go in there like a consultant. You're in the information age. The Industrial Revolution is over. And basically, in the information age, you have to approach this as a consultant, no different than a country doctor coming in knowing that there is problems in there and to come in there as a healer. If you go in there minding your P's and Q's and you won't ask the questions, how are you going to basically utilize your psychic abilities to truly heal that company if you're walking on eggshells and minding your P's and Q's? So it's a bit of a revelation when you start looking at coaching people on operating authentically on the interview instead of putting on the interview mask and then trying to fit in. And then they simply become just another settler instead of the healer that they really could be in terms of the issue of
that
environment.
That is a beautiful way of putting it, Ken.
Well,
and that's needed, you know?
Oh, it's terribly needed. You've got too many factories and companies, and they're all kind of scared. You know, they're thinking, oh, boy, I better not say this, because if I say this, this is going to get me in trouble. Then my boss is going to put me in front of human resources, and then human resources is going to get rid of me because I've said something that was in a moment of passion about the big picture, and now I've got all these victims around me, and they're going to walk me out the door because I said the F word, whatever I really meant, you know, to band people together and let's get our passion up. And I think that when you look at the economy where we're at, if we just get rid of this PC, walking on eggshell stuff, we're going to be able to make a huge difference.
I mean, what happened to the cowboy yee-haw, you know, of American culture? That's what we were known about around the world. Now we're the second fiddle because we dampened that spirit like we have.
I think it has something
it's not dead. It's only sleeping.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with the standards that, you know, America was known for having high standards, requiring high standards of students, its workers. You probably can, in the profession that you do, you see that that is something that has changed the standard of the worker today.
Well, that's a really good question. You know, you talk about the standards. One of the things that, and I want to go back to what Jay was saying and kind of tie that into what you were saying there, David. From one of my studies indicate that what this country was founded on was to basically try to alleviate the caste system, that, you know, we could be more than whatever our father and our mother was. When the Declaration of Independence was signed, it wasn't just for the United States. It was a beacon of liberty throughout the planet, a shining example that, you know, you have a potential. You can reach your potential. And it was a pioneering spirit. It was a standard of industrial, and, you know, we work. And it takes work. The number one ethic to me is work ethic. That's where the rubber hits the road. So here we are in the United States of America these days. I don't want to bash a union, but in essence, we're not competitive enough with the global economy. And you talk about standards. I know that we have high standards as a race, generally speaking. We do embrace diversity. That's another very high standard. I don't know. I believe that we have very high standards.
I agree. I just think that we were the manufacturer. We look at the world as the supermarket in which we sold our goods and services. Now it's turned around. Now they're made outside of the United States, and we're the largest supermarket in the world. So in a lot of cases, we don't do what people from foreign countries do. Here, Sam was just going to throw out something. You're a Chinese engineer, and you're asked to come to the United States for 3 years and leave your family. For the company, you go do that. If you ask an American, you know, you're probably going to have to ask 10 guys to try to get one to go instead of the volunteer from another country that volunteers to come over. It just seems like the growing trend of us being the supermarket stemming from that, you know, people resist change. I mean, nobody likes the change. They like the status quo. They like it where it's comfortable. And so I think of us as a nation, as far as a working force, we've got to change like the rest of the global world changes.
Very well put. Very well put. Mm-hmm. We have to change.
Yeah, what we're speaking of is highly inspirational. You look at everyone that I've ever spoken to about how do they view the United States of America these days. It still shines as a beacon of liberty. Now, this is prosperity. This is, commerce. It's still a very inspirational place to live. Some of the problems that I believe that we're facing is that, again, it's going to go right back to the core. People have to wake up to a higher standard. And the higher standard where we're at right now with the information age and with the internet, we desire to continue to hold that beacon higher of liberty. You know, diversity is key. Embracing spiritual practices. Imagine an organization that embraces authenticity and spiritual clearing, life energy clearing, executive coaching. Get these walls down between departments and people. What we're really all talking about here is the concept of being self-determined. Self-determinism is definitely the key. Now, when you get a group of individuals who are self-determined, that are above the survival instinct or the herding instinct of the masses. And that's basically what you're looking at when you look at what founded the United States of America, that we don't need the big bureaucracies and, you know, the hierarchical casting systems, that we come over here like pioneers and cowboys and let's come out here and make a difference. You know, there's a certain sense of self-determinism.
Okay.
When I look at the next layer or next level is interdependence. But truly imagine, it's within our grasp, we can have enlightened, collective organizations of self-determined individuals who embrace interdependence and embrace diversity. The level of productive energy, the level of social acceptance, the level of responsibility would increase. This is my passion.
Well, yeah. People rarely shoot their customers. I mean, when you think of world peace, you got to think trade. That's, you know, you don't shoot your supplier and you don't shoot your customer. It's a friendly deal.
It's supposed to be.
Yeah. It normally is. I mean, there's always, like, pockets of insanity in the world, but even they have to eat.
It's true. That's true. Even they have to eat. You're correct on that.
Trade is the key. In one of your CDs, I forget exactly, was it called Prosperity?
Yep.
I mean, it is such a wonderful message. I mean, it is the people do not fight if they're in a fair exchange.
That's right.
And the idea of embargoes and saying, okay, you know,
I'm not going to eat your grapes.
No.
And you can't buy my wheat. This is just folly. It makes more and more problems in the world.
I think the quickest way to world peace is the example of trade. It might sound like it's off the wall, but I personally believe we can have a big, hairy, audacious goal. And there's a very popularized artist came out with a book, Good to Great, and Built to Last. He talks about how do you bring people together. You know, and he looked at society throughout the ages and things that were built to last, like even look at any culture. Anytime you have rumblings in the masses, you know, let's build a monument to a unified paradigm, God, us, you know, the pyramids, monument, things of this nature. There's such a big trouble on this planet that seems to be emanating out of the Middle East. And who's to say that we couldn't bring together a large monument where every society, every culture, whatever they're the most proud of, whether it's tin, copper, gold, silversmiths, things of this nature, we could all collectively come together and start trading and get into a fair exchange and build this large monument in a very troubled area. I know it's highly idealistic, but in terms of connecting the dots, trade is the solution, and getting everybody to come in there with their pride of their, you know, whatever it is, whether it's glass, crystal from Scotland, it could be you know, gold from India, and we could all come together and build this, you know, huge monument of this unified trade, collective enlightenment on this planet.
Well, I don't think a monument is needed. I think that opening the trade routes back up, getting rid of the unnatural barriers we've created, would help a lot.
Oh, tremendous!
I'm not that interested in politics myself, so I don't really even know what they are. I just kind of know that if you want peace on earth, make a friend.
Start blowing some.
Start what?
That would start
blowing
some. Yeah.
Friendship, yeah.
Yep.
Want peace, blow it. Lead by example.
Yeah.
Because we were the other guy to take the first step.
Hey, David.
Yes.
Hey, David.
Yes.
I can barely hear you.
You're quiet, David.
I'm real quiet?
Yeah.
There you go. I can hear you a little bit better.
Okay, how's that?
That's Mucho de Bedero.
I'm sorry?
Give me your solution to world peace. It's a great one.
My solution to world peace. Boy, that's a tall order. You know, I kind of believe that when two people can sit down and talk to each other and they agree to disagree, I think we can have understanding. I think when we go and we say, oh, you're a bad guy, we're not going to talk to you, blah, 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 we're going to nuke you, I think that's a bad idea. So I think talking to each other is probably one of the first things we really need to get back into. We really need to start practicing real diplomacy, because I think that has gone into some weird zone now. You know, it kind of reminds me. I can't help but think of us and the Romans sort of being alike. You know, the Romans sort of became decadent and they started thinking everybody had to do what they wanted them to do. And they fell. So, in answer to your question, I think it takes a collective thought to put some of the people in charge and making them accountable. Also.
Hey, Julie.
Yes.
Give me your dream of world peace, and how do we get there?
My dream of world peace? Why can't we just all get along?
That's a powerful thing, wasn't it? And don't say else, but you don't have to say anything else for the show.
That's, as David, as you had said, that's a tall order.
And I would have to agree with you on that. When you can sit down and agree to disagree, that's the beginning right there. I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
I think, as you had said, we tend to think our way is the only way. And if you don't do it our way, we're going to nuke here. We're going to go in over here. We're going to do this and that. You have to sit down and agree to disagree and come up with a reasonable solution to the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And agree on it.
And don't be afraid to change.
And don't, exactly.
I mean, we've been doing this for 25 years. Don't tell me how to, you know. I mean, how many times you heard that in your life?
You know, yeah. Well, there's a book out there that it's called Who Moves Cheese? And it's all about change. You get stuck in a rut. And you tend to do things the same way over and over and over again. Then you get lost.
Mm-hmm.
You have to change. The world is changing. You have to change with it.
Here's a good idea. It just popped in my head. In order to run for any office, you know, we can start with the UN. Every person, any dignitary, any ambassador in the UN, should have to bring all their children in, not have to, but it's an ideal. If we could get our children, the dignitaries' children, to start playing with each other. So obviously, we're not grown up enough to do it. They would start to actually embrace their differences. So there's
children
a big play school at the UN, and all the dignitaries' children have to come in. I don't like to say have to, but, you know, think about that.
Kind of like UN daycare?
Yeah, UN daycare. I can see where the Palestinians and the Israelis and, you know, all these nations and a great big UN daycare. We might learn a lot from those children.
Well, yeah,
and
if
we're
not told to hate, then they won't.
That's right.
That's right. We're not so different from each other after all, are we?
No.
No.
Of course not.
So, Ena, do you want to be the nanny?
Hell no. I don't do daycare.
Obviously, the future is in our children.
It's true. True. But it better be done by someone with more patience than me.
Hey, David.
Yeah.
You want to be daddy daycare at the UN?
Nobody.
DG's children had a good... out there.
None of us are volunteering.
And, you know, I'm going to tell you, if you said, you were, I think Jay was talking about, or somebody was saying, sit the kids together, and have them play. I mean, if you put kids in a room together, they usually figure it out. And they usually have a good time. They're actually smarter than adults. I mean, they learn some bad habits from their parents and things, but kids, by and large, they can get along.
Yeah.
And I think we as adults, man, we've lost. And this is something I think about clearing that it does for us, is it sort of brings the child back at some point. I mean, the idea of looking to learn, to know something. Kids are great for that. Kids are just like vacuums. And to open up to that again as an adult, man, it's powerful. Weird to some people, but powerful. Because you're looking and you're asking, you're seeking. You want to know. And
I agree with you 100%.
I think
kids don't have that.
Huh?
Kids don't have that preconceived notion that there's something up with this person. They do something different than I do.
Mm-hmm.
They only see them as somebody to talk to and find something different to do, a change from their everyday thing that they do. You know,
yeah, they think it's neat.
Yeah.
Oh, they eat this way or they do this way.
Right.
Yeah, my kids
had a Chinese girl in class, so my daughter comes up and she wanted to go eat Chinese, and first thing she did was ask a lady to help me eat with chopsticks, type of thing.
Right. Ken, that's a great idea. So when are you going to start this babysitting thing?
Well, see, I try to combine both of these concepts, Let's get the kids in the UN daycare, right? And then let's have them build this great big monument, you know? I'm still on this monument. I still see it.
I see
Crystal from Scotland. I see, you know, whatever, your nation.
Yeah,
I see it. You know, it's like, you know, get people working together, playing together, you know. Let's seed this concept into the youth before they go into first grade, please, because by the time they go into first grade, guess what ends up happening? They fall prey to making less of their psychic abilities to fit into the herding instinct of fear.
Yeah.
And that's what we were all basically looking at, is this fear. You know, I mean, that's what, you know, Enid, would you say that most cases comprised of fear?
No. I would say most cases is comprised of lies that you've come to believe.
Lies that you've come to believe, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that might tend to make you fearful, but it's believing in things that aren't true that sets us on a path that's often destructive.
Why would anyone lie?
Well, I don't think they mean to lie. It's like they've come to believe something that isn't true, but they think it's true. So, I mean, I'm not talking about deliberate lying. I'm talking about believing in things that just aren't so.
What do you think the biggest lie on the planet is? If you could snap your fingers and get just rid of one lie like that, what? Well, do planetary clearing right now. Just go, that's a lie. What's the one lie you'd like to be able to go, whew, vanish?
Ooh, that's a tall order. That is a very tall order. maybe the one that makes us all think that we're smaller than we really are.
Yeah, I was sitting there thinking that we're bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the same thing, actually?
Yeah.
That we're spiritual beings having a human experience and taking responsibility for such.
Mm-hmm.
Would be awful nice.
Would be.
Think of a productive instability we would become as just humans.
That would be some serious joy there. I don't know if those two words go hand in hand, but that would be some joy.
Serious joy.
I thought we'd be off the planet.
I love it. Yeah, this is
pretty fast.
You guess that?
We know what you meant, Ken.
Go ahead, Jay. I want you to finish that last sentence.
Well, I was just saying this. You know, for example, I think one of the things, we would be out in the universe, you know, doing the Star Trek stuff, we had that type of philosophy. Because we would be more combined, more focused, and just the little game here on Earth wouldn't be enough. Beings of that magnitude.
I love my addictions to bodies. I'm addicted to bodies. I mean, I do have my addictions. I know I'm not this body. It's part of me, but if you could just get everyone to wake up to the concept that what's given us this concept of separation is the illusion of solids. I don't want to go too high up there, but Enid, see if you can work me out of that.
Hey, man, you dig your own hole.
Well, the metaphysicians of physics guys have been trying to put you there for 40 years. Well, that glass is not sitting there. It's moving. Let me hear me take a picture of it and show it to you.
Yeah. I did dig myself a hole there, didn't I?
You did. Great hole.
And you're the only one that had the backhoe to fill it back in, yeah.
Yeah. Search for calling. And search for purpose. A good purpose. Joy. Is there a higher emotion? Is there a higher state than joy?
Oh, probably. But, you know, Serenity has been sought after for a long time as a very high emotion. I think it is, but I also think that you don't get much done if you're serene all the time.
You don't get what?
Much done.
Oh, yeah, serenity, yeah.
Yeah, so I prefer to go for a nice, joyful experience that where we can still be productive, if that makes any sense.
Oh, I totally get it. It's this concept of be, do, have. I think it's all over the planet now.
Uh-huh.
You hear it in all these books.
Yeah.
I think in our last conversation I was saying, I like that little sweet spot right at be and do. You know, when you were talking about serenity, you don't get much done. That's just pure being.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, get in that.
But, in fact, it's a wonderful state of being. It's way up there. But, again, you know, if you're totally serene, you have no need for ambition.
You've accomplished everything you set out to do.
Or it simply doesn't matter to you.
Right.
Yeah. Sounds bored. Sounds like it'd be boring.
No, well, boring is way lower. The person in serenity is not bored. But, again, they're not very busy.
Yeah, you're talking about transcendence.
Yeah, I am.
So, when is the last time you've had a small miracle, like a butterfly come beside you when you were thinking, you know, joyful thoughts?
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, this morning, probably out in the garden. It's, you know, these little miracles of life are all around us. You don't have to go too far to find them.
I just love it. I'm driving really slow down a small town, and I'm looking at these beautiful dogwoods and these red bud trees, and I'm just, you know, so in the now, and all of a sudden three butterflies come by my windshield, look in, and then just kind of cruise away. This is harmonic. So I love that.
Yeah. It's these little things that make life so valuable to us. The magic of the universe itself and the living things within it.
Yeah.
And that includes the humans. They're pretty magical sometimes.
The appreciation of it, I think, too, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's where I was at.
Yeah, I mean, you know, being able to connect with nature, and that's pretty awesome.
I love it.
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. You made me think of when you were talking about your butterflies. I just came back from a trip in Costa Rica, and I went to a reserve down there. And it was really interesting walking in and just sort of melding into the space itself. I mean, it was magical. You're in a rainforest, and here are all these butterflies flying around you. And I just stayed still and was just silent and in the moment. And it was amazing how these little guys had just come and lined my shoulders, my head.
Oh, man, you're getting goosebumps,
cool.
Man.
It was pretty
That's
magical.
Great.
Just connecting with nature like that. And, you know, to be able to do that as a being and sense that being also, because that being is also life, like, meaningly, the butterfly, of course, but it's pretty magical.
I guess.
Hey, Julie.
Yeah, I could consider myself to be fortunate. I get that every day. I am 500 feet back in the woods, and I see nothing but butterflies. I hear the birds chirping daily. I see hawks. I see deer all over my backyard, turkeys.
And I sit there and it just amazes me. It's unbelievable what joy I get out of just sitting there watching all this from nature.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you a story about a tall Texan. This guy's name's Ken Milburn. And Ken was supposed to be a guest on the night show, and he came down with a cold but couldn't make it. But it's one of the most beautiful stories I want to share with you. I had the opportunity to, he's a corporate executive director, VP level in quality and materials management. And, you know, he's got that cowboy charm. And he's a very, very sharp, highly intellectual person, one of these Mensa people. But he always coming off with these yarns. But anyway, I could talk about him for a long time. He'd get on his motorcycle, and he would connect with nature, and he would blow off the steam from work and all that, as we've all done before. And took him out to see Enid Vienne and David Womack out in La Mesa, California, and he had just received a clearing session and got through a couple of levels. And it was like watching a man who had wrinkles in his forehead, you know, the weight of the world on his shoulders, and he came out of the clearing session, and I came out in Enid's backyard, where it's very beautiful. You got a great, beautiful fountain, and it's just, you know, serene. You got, you know, dragonflies and hummingbirds, and it's just beautiful. And I walked out there, you know, lighted myself up a cigarette, and go over there and just be with him and, you know, feel the difference. And it kind of looked like a kind of like a eagle of a man who was just sitting there in just pure poise in the now. And walked up there and I sat beside him for a spell. And he just looked at me and his eyes were just white and he was glowing. And he goes, "Ken, I have been searching ever since I was a kid for a certain type of flower. I've been on my motorcycle, I've looked, I've researched, I've done everything, and I just never could find this one certain type of flower." And he pointed at the ground and he goes, "There it is."
That's awesome.
Right after clearing.
That is awesome.
I know
what his feeling was at that moment, and to be able to find something that he's been looking for all of his life,
yeah,
right after and in the moment, that's beautiful.
Enid, I can't tell you how much beauty you have shared on this planet with your works. You know, I've seen it myself, I've seen it with Jay, I've seen it with, obviously, with my wife, my children. You've had thousands of clients that have, you know, come across the planet, you know, sought you out. You don't have a pretentious bone in your body. You're not one of those blissed out new age gurus, ching ching. You go out on your deck there, your porch, and in the morning, and it's just like, I don't even know where to, I don't know where to end.
Okay.
But it's awesome.
Well, thank you. Good time to help you out.
Yeah. David, I get a lot of compliments. Send out executives to go out and see you. And they are just totally blown away. They go, you know, "How does David do it?" I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Well, you know, I'm sitting there doing poise, learning poise, how important that is in my life, not in, you know, with my family, but especially at work. And, you know, I've got this issue, and I know it's, I'm hiding it, you know, and he can just look at me and just, you know, raise an eyebrow, just a slight eyebrow. And I know that he knows that I know that he knows that I'm doing it." And it's just like, I'm hiding it. He's such a powerful and gentle yet, you know, exacting ability that you've got there.
Thank you.
and I don't know how to explain it. I remember one time I was doing poise with you, David. It was about 2 years ago.
By the way, poise is an exercise that we do.
Yeah. And you just kept looking at me like, all right, I know, come on, let it go. Let it, you know, was holding on to us. But, David, you understand I've got such a serious investment in this wall.
Yeah, you're pretty invested in it.
Oh, yeah.
But so you let it go.
Yeah.
And that's part of doing those exercises, is challenging oneself to go beyond the bigger self, to the bigger self, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's a challenge we all face, I think, daily, to stand up and be counted by the day.
Okay. All right, well, we're at the end of the show here. I would like to go ahead and thank my guest, Enid Vien, dynamism.org, David Womack, and Julie Kroger. This is Ken Payne at Search for Calling. Thank you very much.